This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV.
The following presentation of the Midland City Council will begin in a moment. The Midland City Council is the city's legislative body. It sets policies, approves budgets, determines tax rates, and adopts ordinances and resolutions to govern the city. It is made up of 5 elected officials that represent the wards in which they reside, and councilmen are elected to 2-year terms. The mayor is elected from among the council members by vote of the city council. City council meetings are held at 7 p.m. 2 Mondays per month in council chambers at City Hall. This presentation is provided by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland. Replays of this meeting can be found on MGTV Channel 188 on Charter Spectrum, through Channel 99 on AT&T UVerse, or on demand at www.cityofmidlandmi.gov. Select meetings are available on MCTV Network's Government Affairs podcast channel.
Good evening and welcome to our September 25th, 2023 meeting of City Council. Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Lacey, would you please call roll?
Honorable Mayor Donker.
Here.
Councilman Wasbinski.
Here.
Councilman Arnosky.
Here.
Councilman Brown-Wilhelm.
Here.
Councilman Soler.
Here.
All right, thank you very much. Does anyone in council have a conflict of interest with anything that's on this evening's agenda?
Madam Mayor.
Okay, seeing none, then we can move on. That takes us to the consent agenda. All resolutions marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate consideration of these items unless a council member or citizen so requests during the discussion stage of the motion to adopt the consent agenda as indicated. If there's even a single request, the item will be removed from the consent agenda without further motion and considered in its listed sequence in regular fashion. Is there anyone from council who would like an item removed from the consent agenda?
Yes, Mayor. I'd like item number 7 removed, please.
Okay. Anyone from the public want an item removed from the consent agenda? All right, then can we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So move.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 5-0. Okay, well, this evening we have a couple of proclamations, and we're going to start right out with those. And Selena is going to introduce the first couple.
Midland has always prided itself as being a diverse and welcoming community that really cares about one another and our neighbors. And one of the organizations that helps to carry that banner for us is the Midland Area Cultural Awareness Coalition. And tonight we are presenting them with 2 proclamations. The first one is declaring the month of October as Cultural Awareness Month in the City of Midland. And the second is to declare September 24th through the 30th as Midland Neighboring Week in the city. And here to collect both of those proclamations is Tricia Fenby with the Midland Area Cultural Awareness Coalition.
All right, Lacey, would you please read both of the resolutions?
Okay. This resolution authorizes the mayor to issue 2 proclamations designating October 1st through 31st, 2023 as Cultural Awareness Month and September 24th through the 30th, 2023 as Midland Neighboring Week in the City of Midland as an official kickoff to Cultural Awareness Month.
All right, can we have a motion to accept that with the resolutions?
So moved. Second.
All right, do we have any discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, that passes 5-0. Now will you please read the proclamation?
Whereas the City of Midland prides itself on being a welcoming, giving community where people care about each other, whereas Midland County's vision is Midland, an inclusive community, together, forward, bold, an exceptional place where everyone thrives, Whereas the vision of the Midland Area Cultural Awareness Coalition, an initiative of Midland Area Community Foundation, is Midland, an inclusive community. Whereas National Good Neighbor Day is held annually on September 28th to promote welcoming and positive relationship building in our neighborhoods across the country. Whereas Midland Neighboring Week encourages neighboring, communication, and inclusivity in the Midland community. Whereas the city seeks to further encouraging neighboring, communication, and inclusivity in the Midland community to promote safer neighborhoods and better resident well-being. Therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim the week of September 24th through September 30th, 2023, as Midland Neighboring Week in the City of Midland, as the official kickoff to Cultural Awareness Month. Second one. Whereas the City of Midland prides itself on being a welcoming, giving community where people care about each other. Whereas Midland County's vision is Midland, an inclusive community, together, forward, bold, an exceptional place where everyone thrives. Whereas the vision of the Midland Area Cultural Awareness Coalition, an initiative of the Midland Area Community Foundation, is Midland, an inclusive community. Whereas October is recognized globally as Diversity Awareness Month. Whereas beginning October 1st, the Cultural Awareness Coalition will be sponsoring and or promoting events that celebrate culture and community as a way to promote inclusion and community engagement in Midland. Therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim October 1st through the 31st, 2023, as Cultural Awareness Month in the City of Midland, together with the Midland Neighboring Week in a joint partnership.
Well, thank you, Church, for being here this evening and being here to tell us about those. So certainly neighboring has a wonderful history here in Midland. It's been going on for a long time, and certainly the work of the Cultural Awareness Committee being the organization that's really helped driving that work, plus additional work, is really pretty amazing and very important to who we want to be as a city. So thank you for being here, and if you would just talk a little bit about what's going to happen with both of those things, that would be wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Midland County Neighboring Week and the Cultural Awareness Month are both organized through the community, Midland Area Community Cultural Awareness Coalition. We do this to further the work of making our Midland mission of an inclusive community where everyone thrives a reality. Both neighboring and cultural awareness are at the forefront of bringing a sense of belonging into our community. We have several events that are taking place for the next month that provide a way to celebrate neighboring and cultural awareness. I do encourage you to visit the Max Loves Midland website to see what some of these events are. It's a great way to see what's happening in our community and to be able to celebrate with your neighbors and your friends and your family. I'd like to also highlight a few of these activities that I personally find important and enjoyable. The first would be the Join or Die documentary that is part of our neighboring and cultural awareness program. This documentary took place and was showed at our library a couple weeks ago, but we are offering a community discussion on this on September 28th at 6 p.m. at our local Delta College building. You do not have to have seen the show to be able to come to this discussion, and it would be a great opportunity for you to engage in that community discussion about the documentary and to help build a plan on how to engage our citizens to make Midland more inclusive and more welcoming. The library is hosting a Floats with Goats event this Wednesday that I highly recommend, especially if you like goats or floats. We have a beautiful opportunity through our Midland Police Department to collect food and see a movie. And all of our coffee shops are offering specialty drinks this week where the proceeds are going toward helping the Open Door. Those are just a few of the neighboring events that are taking place that give you an opportunity to connect with the people in your environment, in your neighborhood. Cultural Awareness Month offers many opportunities to explore the diversities in our community. A few that I would like to promote would be the LGBTQ Social Hour that is taking place the first Wednesday in October. The Midland Center for the Arts has some shows that are specifically related to cultural awareness, and the Disability Network is having some discussion about inclusive opportunities in our community. I'd like to thank you all for taking this opportunity to see the importance of neighboring and cultural awareness and to celebrate what our community has to offer.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, that takes us down to item number 3, which has to do with Fire Prevention Week, and Chief Mosier is here to tell us about that.
Good evening. I just want to thank you, Mayor Donker, and council members for allowing us to bring this resolution forward and for the proclamation declaring the week of October 8th as Fire Prevention Week in the City of Midland. Your support of the Midland Fire Department and informing the public about fire safety is very important to us. While fire prevention is a year-round focus for the Midland Fire Department, nationally it's recognized every year the week of October 9th. That is October 9th in it. Every year there's a specific theme or campaign that we go with, and here to accept the proclamation and talk a little bit more about the theme is our Fire Marshal, John Jurek.
Okay, very good. Lacey, would you please read the resolution?
Authorizes the mayor to issue a proclamation designating October 8th through the 14th, 2023 as Fire Prevention Week in Midland.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, that passes 5-0. And Lacey, would you please read that proclamation?
Whereas the City of Midland is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting Midland, and whereas homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire, and whereas home fires have caused 79 civilian deaths in Michigan to date in 2023, according to the Michigan Fire Inspectors Society, and whereas cooking is the second leading cause of home fires in Michigan, and whereas Midland residents should stay in the kitchen when cooking, turn pot handles toward the back of the stove, always keep a lid nearby when cooking, keep a 3-foot kid-free zone around cooking areas, and keep anything that can catch fire away from stovetops, and whereas working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in reported home fires in half, and whereas residents who plan and practice home fire escape plans are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire, and whereas the Midland Fire Department is dedicated to reducing the occurrence of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education, and whereas the 2023 Fire Prevention Week theme, Cooking Safety Starts With You, Pay Attention to Fire Prevention, effectively serves to remind Midland to stay alert and use caution when cooking to reduce the risk of kitchen fires. Now, therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim October 8th through the 14th, 2023, as Fire Prevention Week throughout this city and urge all the people of Midland to plan and practice a home fire escape for Fire Prevention Week 2023 and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of the Midland Fire Department.
So thank you for being here this evening to remind us about that. I think fire is one of the things we think happens to other people, and it could very easily happen to each of us. So thank you for, you know, coming here on an annual basis, reminding us how important it is to be thoughtful around that and telling us some of the things that are going to be happening this week. So thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So a little background on Fire Prevention Week. On October 8th, 1871, a devastating fire occurred. This came to be known as the Great Chicago Fire. This conflagration, which started in a single barn on the southwest side of Chicago, left a third of the city homeless and 300 people without their lives. This fire, while it's the most well-known, was actually part of an epidemic that was going on in the country at the time. These fires were happening across the country, all the way from Seattle to Boston. In 1922, the National Fire Protection Association, everybody knows as the NFPA, sponsored the first Fire Prevention Week to commemorate the Great Chicago Fire. In 1925, that became a national observance by proclamation of then President Calvin Coolidge, and has become the, if I'm not mistaken, the longest national observance, public health observance in this country. So every year, NFPA chooses a theme for Fire Prevention Week. And as you heard in the proclamation, that this year's theme is Cooking Safety Starts With You. Pay attention to fire safety. We from the Midland Fire Department would like to remind everyone to stay alert while cooking and keep items that can accidentally catch fire away from the stove. Traditionally, during Fire Prevention Week, the Midland Fire Department takes this opportunity to showcase the department and engage with our community through our annual Fire Prevention Open House. Last year, we had an amazing turnout, and we hope to better that this year. We hope this to be our biggest yet. We're going to be having many fun, interactive, and educational ways for us, for the community to interact with all of us who are dedicated every day, 24/7, 365 days a year to protecting our great city. So on behalf of the Midland Fire Department, I'd like to thank Mayor Donker and the rest of the City Council for your continued support of our fire prevention efforts through this proclamation.
Thank you very much for this really important reminder. All right, that takes us down to public hearings. And this evening we have one public hearing, and it has to do with zoning petition 651 Stonegate Manor. And Mr. Kane is here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Mayor Donker. I'm only up here once tonight, so you're welcome, I guess. Keep it short tonight. This is a request from Stonegate Manor Condominium Association to rezone 20 of the 22 lots that are located within Stonegate Manor subdivision. There are multiple property owners in this case, being primarily a single family residential neighborhood. The total area in question is just shy of 7 acres. It's currently zoned RB, multiple family residential, and the request tonight is to apply RA3 single family residential in its place. Stonegate Drive is a private court located just west of Perrin Road and just north of North Saginaw Road in the northwest part of Midland. As we zoom in, you'll see the Stonegate Manor is largely developed. There are still a couple vacant lots left. The area in question, subject to the rezoning petition tonight, is primarily the lots that are set in from Perrin Road. So there are two lots excluded from tonight's petition. Those are lots 1 and 22. Which are located out here along Perrin Road. Those lots are developed with two family dwellings on them. The remainder of the lots are either developed as single family or have a deed restriction applied to them, which requires single family development. The future land use for this property is medium density residential. We do have a variety of future land use designations in the immediate vicinity, including office, service, and commercial to the south, medium density residential to the east and west, and low density residential to the north. Subject properties are located currently in the RB Multiple Family Zoning District, which is the same zoning district that exists to the east, west, and to the southeast. To the south and southwest, we have office, service, and community commercial zoning. And to the north, we have RA1 single family residential zoning. RA3 is one of the city's four RA zoning districts. It is one of three that permits only single family residential development. These districts differ primarily in terms of the required minimum area density and building placement requirements among them. RA1 has the largest requirements generally in terms of lot width, lot area, and setback. RA3 of the three single family RA districts does have the smallest requirements. These requirements do most closely align with those of the RB Multiple Family Zoning District, which is the one that's currently in place on these lots, and that is why the applicants, the petitioners, are requesting RA3 zoning, because those dimensional requirements are largely consistent. So going through the review criteria, is the proposed amendment consistent with the city's master plan? Staff's answer is yes. The applicant's proposed zoning of RA3 is consistent with the future land use designation of medium density residential, which does describe it itself as including single family residential development. Two, will the amendment be in accordance with the intended purpose of the zoning ordinance? And staff's answer would be yes. These lots are arranged and designed in a manner that will allow for development that's in keeping with the goals and intent of the zoning ordinance and also with the requirements of the RA3 zoning district. Have conditions changed since the zoning ordinance was adopted that justify this amendment? Staff's answer is yes. The subject lots contain a deed restriction limiting development to single family dwellings, and all development since that time has been for single family residential purposes. Four, will the amendment merely grant special privileges? And staff's answer is no, because the zoning is consistent with that of surrounding properties. Five, will the amendment result in unlawful exclusionary zoning? And staff's answer is no. Six, will the amendment set an inappropriate precedent? Staff's answer is no. The proposed amendment is not grounds for an inappropriate precedent because the proposal aligns with the city's master plan. 7 is the proposed zoning consistent with the surrounding zoning classifications of surrounding land. As I noted earlier, there are a variety of zoning classifications in the immediate vicinity. The proposed zoning is in line with the zoning of land to the north, and it's also compatible and consistent with zoning to the east and west, which is currently and proposed to remain RB multiple family residential. 8 is the proposed zoning consistent with the future land use designation of the surrounding land and the city's master plan. And the staff's answer is yes. The proposed zoning, again, in the area, we do have a variety of future land use designations, which include low to medium density residential, office service, and commercial. The proposed RE3 zoning classification is consistent with all of those. Could the requirements in the proposed zoning classification be complied with on the subject parcel? Staff's answer is yes. We have discussed this matter with the property owners at length to alert them to the fact that their properties may be considered non-conforming if any existing development was done in a manner that is inconsistent with the RA3 zoning district. As I noted, the RA3 zoning requirements are largely the same as the RB multiple family zoning district, which is why that particular district was selected for this petition. And they are aware that any future development on these sites will have to be compliant with all the requirements imposed under the RA3 zoning classification.
Did they give you any pushback?
Did the petitioners?
No, those that you talked to let them know that they could be impacted if
no this pushback. Has been an ongoing conversation since last year. And finally, number 10, is the proposed zoning consistent with trends in land development in the general vicinity of the property in question? Staff's answer is yes. The subject properties are single-family dwellings or vacant land. Existing developments to the east, north, and west are residential in nature. Development along North Saginaw is primarily community-oriented offices and retail uses or multiple-family residential developments, which are typically located along major corridors and not uncommonly found adjacent to single-family development. We've received no public comments on the zoning petition to date. Staff recommends approval based on the following. The proposed zoning is consistent with the city's future land use map. The proposed zoning supports goals of the city's master plan. And the proposed zoning is consistent with existing development in Stonegate Manor and will facilitate future development that is consistent with the pattern and use of development in the general vicinity. Planning Commission's recommendation is also to approve zoning petition number 651. And with that, we're at the last step in tonight's process with City Council's public hearing and your decision. Okay. We welcome any questions.
Sure. Okay, before I open it up for questions, let me just talk about public hearing because I didn't do that to begin with. So after the presentation by staff, Council will ask any questions they might have. Once we ask our question, we'll open the public hearing. And if there's anyone from the public that would like to comment on this, please come up, stand on the blue mat. It's right underneath Mr. Kane, and direct all of your comments, please, to Council. Once we hear from the public, we'll close the public hearing, and then we'll go on to discuss that. So with that, is there any comments or questions from Council as it relates to this? Okay, seeing none.
Thank you.
Then we'll open the public hearing. Is there any comments from the public as it relates to this topic? All right, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. And Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution approves amending the City of Midland zoning map by rezoning Stonegate Manor lots 2 through 21 from RB multiple family residential to RA3 single family residential.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, first and second. Any discussion on this?
No, other than it's my ward and it's supportive of it. I've talked to the residents. I mean, this is really just recognizing exactly how this Stonegate Manor has developed over the last several years.
Who initiates it? Was it the homeowners? Is it the city?
You can ask Jacob how that started.
So I can save you a trip up, Jacob. So in this particular case, there have been something like the conditional use permit, you recall, that had to come in before that was initiated by the private property owner. In this particular case, this is discussions that have taken place between Jacob and the residents on that area. And from a city perspective, we recognize that this was an amendment to be brought forward, and so it was initiated at the staff level. Nope.
Okay.
He's nodding no. So apparently he actually had the applicants initiate that. So
yeah, sorry, I just had to
I should have had
up.
You come on.
No, it's okay. Yeah, this
you missed us, didn't you?
I did. This petition was initiated by the Condominium Association and with signatures from all impacted property owners. So we had all 20 parcel owners. There's not 20 total owners because there's some joint ownership, but the owners of all 20 parcels signed on the application to indicate that they were interested and willing in proceeding with this amendment.
Okay, very good, thank you.
There you go.
All right. Any discussion on this? We're ready to vote. All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes 5-0. Thank you very much. All right, that takes us down to public comments. This is an opportunity for people to address council on issues relevant to council business, but not on the agenda this evening. So if you have a public comment, please come up, stand on the blue mat. Again, you need to address council with your comments. Let me just say that this isn't a back and forth conversation. This is our opportunity to hear what your thoughts are or what questions you might have. So with that, is there any public comments this evening? All right, please come on up. You need to, and I'm sorry, I missed one thing important. You need to state your name and address, please.
All right. My name is Roberta Bridge Bush. I am living at 3701 Lawndale here in Midland, and I have lived here in Midland longer than 65 years. And I'm here to talk about the proposed conversion of Rod Street and Ashman to two ways from being one ways. The reason I told you, you know, part of how long I've been here is I remember personally how it was before these were one-way streets. I remember when the changes were made, and I remember before it. And it was made because there were terrible traffic problems, and in addition to the congestion, there was always a lot of accidents. Now, I wasn't very old at the time, so I wasn't collecting statistics for you, but I remember why it happened. Everybody talked about it and they thought it was a good change. And I think it was some years after that, but all they did was just change it to a one-way. And then some years after that, as I remember, they added a third lane, taking away a little bit more of the front yards of everybody on both streets. I think that's what I remember. When I heard that they were talking about making these two-way streets again, then that would be, we currently have three lanes going from the circle to downtown, and three lanes on Ashman, and three lanes going on Rod from downtown back towards the circle. That's six lanes of traffic that are allowed to move around there. If you change it to a two-way street, you're going to have four lanes total, two on each street. So you're going to have considerably less potential for moving the traffic smoothly. And I have heard people talk about there are times when it gets a little congested even with the three lanes there. And then at the planning meeting, there was somebody who suggested that we should put in a bike lane there too. All of that is probably gonna require more expansion of the road. And Mr. Kane had suggested that this whole thing could be accomplished for $500,000, which strikes me as very, very, very strange if it costs more than $500,000 to make a nice restroom at Grove Park. How are they going to do all of this? So the accidents, just because of having traffic going both ways, are one concern. The congestion is another concern. And the other thing that I was concerned about is that the consultants said that this project would cost $3 million or $3.5 million or something like that, and that Mr. Kane thought that somehow we were going to be able to do it for $500,000. I don't think that that's reasonable, and I also think that it seems like the consultant's report could be used to bolster a grant request and make it sound like it's going to cost more than it is. I don't know. There's something kind of screwy with the financial aspects of this that makes me think it needs a deeper look. So those are my two major concerns, besides just my gut reaction, and everybody that I've talked to have said, well, why the heck would they do that? Basically, it doesn't make sense. It's just fine the way it is. And I think that when the young woman from the Midland Daily News, you probably read the article a couple days ago, when she went up and surveyed people who live on Ashman and Rod, basically it was almost a consensus, almost a total consensus, that this was just wasted money. And also there was an ad that Tom McCann put in the paper saying the same thing. He's older than me. Last time I saw him, he was in an Amigo. I kind of thought he'd be here today, but he doesn't seem to be. And I would have been glad to hear what he had to say on this too, but it's basically the same thing. If it's not broken, don't fix it. But I mean, you know, the roads do need to be kept up, the quality of our roads. But this change is ridiculous.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, seeing no other public comment, then we'll move on to item number 6, which has to do with a budget transfer. And tonight we get to hear our new director of finance.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight I'm bringing forward a budget transfer, which is not a budget amendment, but just a transfer. It's already budgeted, but a transfer between departments and activities. Try that. Whoops.
Except you got your window
yeah,
open.
Yeah, I got to get rid of that first. There we go. So the reason for the transfer is we were asked to create a separate horticultural department, and what this will do is move the budgeted revenue and expenses from Parks Department to Horticulture Department, and will simplify cost management and decision making for the horticultural expenses. The resolution before council will transfer the horticultural related expenses out of the 23-24 Parks Department budget and create a new horticulture department for tracking purposes. And here's just what the summary of changes will look like. We will be transferring the general fund revenue that is coming from the DDA for the Midland Blooms project. And then the expenses within the Parks Department are majority of it coming from personnel related, but there's supplies, other services, and no capital outlay was budgeted for the horticulture. In the horticulture, you can see that they were all zero for the adopted budget. And we are now moving those expenses in the amount of $414,658 to the new department or activity and creating that budget there. So that is our budget transfer that we would request to have a resolution on.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Laura?
I have questions. I'm not sure, Laura, if you can answer them or not.
Oh, okay.
What all is included, just kind of in the top line items, in the horticulture, the new horticulture budget? Is it, you know, I think of the, you know, the Midland blooms, you know, along the Eastman. I think of probably downtown, the flower displays there. What else might be included in there, if you know?
I believe, and maybe you can help me with that, that it's like a lot of the plantings and things like that that are along our roadways.
So any of the plantings that the city does, so for instance, if you look on South Saginaw Road, the medians in between, we take care of those, so those costs are associated with that. You mentioned some of the downtown horticulture, but if you get beyond the downtown, you look along the curves where we do areas out through that, so some of the, all of that work, I should say, between be Patrick Lyons out in that particular stretch of road. So those are the types of costs that are largely accounted for within this budget.
Bridges areas, I mean, the bridge areas.
Yeah. Yeah, again, anything that's planted that you see our parks and Rex crew out, because that's usually how their trucks are labeled. They may have horticulture on some, but that they're taking care of the plantings around the city, this is largely reflected in this.
And not really necessarily tree trimming, for example?
No, that would be the forestry section of the funds for that.
Well, how many spots we got like that, you think?
How many what?
How many spots around the city you think we have?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the number.
And I'm assuming the trucks that go in water early in the morning, all that's included in there as an expense, too.
Yeah, you see some of that, particularly the Blooms labeled truck that goes up and down Eastman, but it's also used elsewhere in the city as well.
So I'm assuming this just, I guess a couple things. I see how this can allow us just to understand actually what the costs are. But you know, so as all things, we value certain things, and this is important to understand what those things cost. But does it also help us as it relates to any kind of grant, getting grants?
I would assume that it's would be helpful for Karen and her staff to be able to determine really what needs to be done and if there are grants available. I know there are some specifically for landscape and things like that.
So there's no change in personnel, we're just changing where those numbers
are located?
No, we're
just moving, actually we're moving one full-time position or person and then part of two other full-time people and then having some temp as well.
Okay. Do you take Dave Keenan's spot?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, so it's very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
We're glad you're on board and we're glad that you come here tonight to explain this to us. So
great.
So thanks. Any other questions for Laura? Okay, I think we're all set. Is there any public comment on this particular topic? All right, seeing none, then will you please read the resolution, Lacey?
This resolution requests a transfer from the fiscal year 2023-24 Parks and Recreation budget to establish a new horticulture budget for more simplified cost management and decision-making purposes.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second. Okay.
All right, any discussion on this? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 5-0. All right, that takes us now down to item number 7, and that has to do with the Poseyville Riverfront restoration. And Karen Murphy is working out of town today, so Mr. K is going to walk us through that.
Karen's actually up with our seniors trip to Mackinac Island in the group. I think we had 150 people, if I'm not mistaken, going on the trip this year. So our largest crowd ever. So she's got her hands full up in there. But she's getting great weather at this time of year. So most of us are a little jealous. But that said, my understanding, Councilman Arnosky pulled this and did give me a heads up earlier to say that really what this was intended for wasn't so much about the project itself in terms of the pavilion, but to understand the progress and the status of this report or of this project, excuse me. So for those that aren't aware, this particular renovation, the upgrades, all of the work that is taking place on what we're right now calling Poseyville Park, that may or may not stick, but ultimately right now it's Poseyville Park, is the site of a former 4D concrete block manufacturing facility that was acquired using FEMA funds. And those were part of the hazard mitigation funds, the same that are actually being used right now to acquire properties that were damaged in the latest floods and remove those. With that, however, every time we use FEMA funds, you run into properties that are then deed restricted and have limited uses that are permitted of them, one of which is a park. And so we are able to use that property as a park purpose. And we had started down the path a while ago in terms of determining what the optional or the options that we had relative to this particular park were. What happened at that point in time was the Michigan Baseball Foundation came forward, and for those of you that were on council at the time, you recall, they essentially came to us and said, we have this plan for this site. If you're willing to accept it, we will pay for it and basically implement all of it. Council decided at that time that they would. It included, obviously, restoration of the site, the removal of all the hard surface asphalt that was covering most of the property, the construction of a new bridge that would come and land on a mound. And all of that was the proposal that ultimately was put to council that you accept it. That became difficult in the sense, back to those FEMA regulations and rules, in the sense that a bridge, which FEMA was determining our pedestrian walkway was called, was not a permitted use on the site. So we could not even touch that property with a bridge. As a result, the mayor, Bill Schuette, Tony Stamos from the NBA, myself and some others traveled to Chicago. We met with the Region 5 director for FEMA, had a conversation with him, and quite frankly got a lot more cooperation than we anticipated. And it came to the point that, well, we can't have a bridge, we can have a pavilion on the site. So if we landed the bridge on the pavilion, we can build the bridge, is effectively where we landed on that. So creative, very much cooperative, and a great partnership between FEMA, the city, and all of our funding partners as well, got us to the point that we could move forward with that plan. So with that approval in place, we move forward, we obtain permits. As most of you know, last summer we started some site construction work. But then we ran into a water line that was on the site that was in poorer condition than we understood it to be. We had to halt site work because we literally could not drive over it. And it happens to be the water line that feeds the entire Homer Township water supply system. So we couldn't damage it or risk damaging it with heavy equipment. So construction was paused. The water line had to be removed. It was on our capital plan, but a few years out, you as council authorized the change in the budget timing and allowed us to move with that water project moving it forward. So that work has now been done. The water line's relocated. We can restart again. However, as we got into the permits themselves, the bridge footings, which as it crosses the pedestrian walkway, as it crosses the river itself, there was a small, very minor change to the footings that were required in order to accommodate that. That resulted in literally 1/100th of a cubic foot difference in the permit that we had applied for versus what now needed to be done, which kicked in an amendment at the Eagle permitting stage, which was unfortunate, but it's the rules. And so it's not that they're applying them differently to us than anywhere else. Those are the rules. What surprised us and caught us off guard, however, was that we needed to actually go back and start with a new permit rather than extending and just amending the permit. And so that put us back a little bit, required a little bit of extra work. That's all been, or it's in the process, I should say, right now. The old permits have been cleared out of the way. The new permit is under consideration and should be issued, hopefully very soon, that will allow us to get back underway. Some other challenges that we've had with the site is there's a string of consumers' energy poles, telephone poles that are on the property, on which are run a number of AT&T and service lines. Consumers has been sort of right there with us, ready to go and pull those poles. AT&T wasn't quite so quick to the table, and so we have been working with them diligently to get them to move forward and remove those lines, before we could tear the poles out. The bad news is it took us a long time to get there. The good news is it's going on right now. So the AT&T lines are coming down and being relocated, and Consumers is ready to go as soon as that happens to remove the poles, which will then open up the site to us completely. So that at this point in time, the timing-wise looking forward will be once those are in place and the Eagle permit is reissued to us, we will begin site construction work again, and it'll be the heavy construction. So again, clearing all the heavy debris off the site, building the mound upon which the pavilion will be built, upon which the bridge will land, and then, of course, the bridge installation and construction as well. We anticipate that happening, a lot of the site work taking place, we hope, this summer or this fall, but it won't be until next summer that site work is completed and the bridge is installed. There's other stories in the background. Some of you have seen, I've sent you emails before to advise you that the bridge itself had to be pre-ordered because, as everything else these days, there are large lead times on these types of material. So that bridge was ordered a number of months ago. It's been manufactured. It had to be manufactured in Wisconsin was the where it was produced. It's being shipped now to Midland. There are pieces of it here in town that are being stored for the winter. The rest of it will be here by the end of October, so we should have the entire bridge ready to go, and it will stay stored for the winter until it can be constructed and on-site constructed and assembled, I should say, and put in place on the property. So that will all take place next summer. However, it's still a big site. This property is still about 19 acres in site. Once all the heavy work, the bridge installation is complete, then there's 19 acres of land restoration, final grading, and then the landscape installation as well that need to be done. And our intent, or our belief at least, is that will bleed into the 2025 construction season. So 2024, you'll see the bridge, you'll see most of the site work done. 2025, you'll see the rest of the site completed, built out, and fully ready to be implemented as a park. So many moving parts. It's been a challenging project, very interesting project. Karen and her team working very closely with the Michigan Baseball Foundation. Mr. Schutte, we mentioned him being an early participant in this, has been right there at the table as well, dealing with the fundraising that was necessary to fund this and bring those funds forward to the city, have all been integral to this moving forward to the point it's at today. And otherwise, we'd have been in a challenging position as a city because we certainly did not have the money ourselves to complete the restoration of that park work on our own. So that's where we stand. That was long-winded. I hope I covered what you're looking for, Councilman Arnosky, but if not, I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
No, thank you. Thank you, Brad. That's, I think, pretty good. Pretty thorough summary of where we are right now.
All right. And then, Madam Mayor, the actual resolution is for the purchase of the pavilion tonight, so it's the next step in the process.
Yeah, it's always amazing how long projects take. I think one of the good things that came out of this is we did have an opportunity to meet all those folks from FEMA, and that was in 2020 and just prior to the flood, and they all showed up here during that. So it was very nice to have that support during a time that was really difficult for us, too. So there was a lot of good that came out of it, and more good for us to see in the years to come.
And we're certainly intending to invite them back when we get this park
they
completed.
They said they wanted to come and see this, so we'll invite them for sure. All right. Would you please read the resolution, Lacey?
This resolution authorizes staff to purchase a pavilion structure to be installed as part of the Poseyville South Riverfront Restoration Project based on the Sourcewell Cooperative Purchasing Contract price of $265,257 from Sourcewell's select vendor, Pentura LLC of Brighton, Michigan, with the invoice to be paid through the available project fund at the Midland Area Community Foundation.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on this? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that passes 5-0. All right, that takes us now down to new business. Does anyone in council have any new business, or Mr. Kane?
I want to say publicly thank you to whoever, I don't know who the person is, or maybe it's the whole city at large, but I just moved my mom into Washington Woods, and it was such a smooth process, and I was so impressed with how everything went. It was just fantastic. Really, really happy about it. Yep. I'm impressed with that place. Yep. I really am. And then I look back in the history of it in 77, you know, when it was built, and I was just impressed with from 50 years ago till now. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, we're great. I think that's great that you recognize that, because I think we do have a great team here at the city that work very hard in whatever department they're in to make things, you know, go well. So you'll pass this on, I'm sure.
I certainly will. We've got a great team out there. And again, that's another example of local foundation support that it would never have happened when it did, or quite frankly, the upgrades and update that we've been able to do to that facility over the years as well is partnerships. And that's why the community thrives.
Yep. All right, any other new business?
You know what? I have something.
Okay.
So you may be aware Creative 360 has moved to the corner of Jefferson and Chapel Lane. Last weekend, International Day of Peace celebration was there, but Creative 360 is having a meet and greet for Ward 4 neighbors Friday from 3 until 7 p.m. So anybody in Ward 4, come on out for the meet and greet. We have new neighbors.
All right. Very good. Anything else? All right then, seeing none, we're adjourned. Thank you.
This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV. We hope you enjoy the following presentation.